This is Earth 52, Episode 4, All-Star Superman. I'm Justin, and this is Earth 52. Today I'll be reviewing All-Star Superman, the book, and the animated movie. The book was written by Grant Morrison, and the artist was Frank Quitely. Movie stars James Denton, Christina Hendricks, and Anthony LaPaglia. The director was Sam Liu. I hope I didn't butcher that last name. Anyways, let's move on. Alright, so the book was written by Grant Morrison, and in all honesty, it's one of his better works that I've read. I'm not a huge fan of Morrison, and to find out why a little bit later when I go on my rants. I'm also not a huge fan of Frank Quitely, but he does seem to be a good partner with Grant Morrison. They do seem to complement each other, just, you know, despite the fact I'm not huge fans of either of them. But what made this story unique, in my opinion, is the use of the 60s Superman, and, for those of you who don't know, the 60s Superman was basically the Superman we know today, except for he was a lot stronger, and he was pretty much better at everything, and he had Lois Lane and Lana Lang constantly fighting over him, and pretty much all of his adventures were fairly ridiculous. For example, in this one, we got to see Atlas and Samson, which was good, and we saw those guys in the 60s. And of course, in the 60s, we always had like 6 million types of kryptonite. White kryptonite, green kryptonite, red kryptonite, yellow kryptonite, blue kryptonite, black kryptonite, magical kryptonite, kryptonite found at the bottom of a Kryptonian toilet kryptonite. It's completely ridiculous. And so it was good to see black kryptonite is in this story, and I did appreciate that. It did kind of seem to mirror Smallville's use of red kryptonite, but I'm sure that was just a coincidence. Grant Morrison did add a whole nother layer to Superman, one that you don't usually see, one that shows his weaknesses as well as his strengths. I mean, we do see his weaknesses in, you know, action comics and Superman all the time now these days, but he really showed what Superman thinks on the inside in an unusual way, because it's not the Superman we know, and yet his motivations are always the same, and it was unusual. For instance, the mirror scene had an unusual twist on the Clark Kent Superman relationship, and it was very interesting, because most of the time you think of Superman, okay, Clark Kent is Superman, but in this case, it made it seem like Superman and Clark Kent share the same body, when they're supposed to be the same person, but the way that Grant Morrison described it in this mirror scene, they're very much not. They're two very different people, and yet they're both Kal-El at the same time. So that was interesting. And then, of course, going on with the Clark Kent Superman thing, it was just amazing to watch people refuse to believe that Clark Kent is Superman. It was just, Lois Lane didn't believe it, and then when, you know, Clark Kent rushes in with the story, then he has to change into Superman in front of people. People are still like, oh, good job, Superman, for disguising yourself as Clark Kent. So, you know, it's amazing what people will refuse to believe after they've lived what they believe to be a truth for so long. Like, I don't know if the government came out tomorrow and said that Canada is actually another U.S. state. People wouldn't believe that, because they've come to believe that Canada is another country. They've lived that for so long, and, you know, all of a sudden, the way they see the world is shattered, and they can't comprehend it. So I'm glad that Grant Morrison put that in there, because in the 60s, it was always people trying to find out whether or not Clark Kent was Superman, and even though it was painfully obvious, you know, people didn't want to believe it. And, you know, there's always the one person that says, well, Superman's just wearing glasses. Why doesn't anyone see that he's Superman when he's Clark Kent? Well, that's why. People don't want to believe that meek, mild Clark Kent is the great god that they consider Superman. They don't want to bring a god down to the level of a human. And so I thought that was very interesting to see. Of course, you know, he did bring a lot of modern stuff into this 60s world. Of course, he updated the entire universe itself, but he also brought later creations into this 60s universe. For instance, the Doomsday brought it into the world without Superman having to die. And it also, you know, harkened back to when Jimmy turned into every odd other thing in the universe. I mean, he turned into Porcupine Boy, Giant Turtle Boy, Elastilad, you know, Genie, Swamp Guy, whatever. Jimmy turned into it. And Grant Morrison's meshing of the 60s Superman with the modern Superman in a way, he did it in a way that made you wonder if the story was in continuity when all the markers pointed to a non-continuity story. Alright, so if you notice at the end of the Lex Luthor jail scene, Clark Kent is ferried away by Lex Luthor's niece. And when I saw that last panel of that issue, it was Clark Kent in the boat with this kind of gothish girl in the background rowing him, and it was a two-person boat, obviously. And I could not get the concept of Chiron out of my head. And Chiron is this Greek figure who is the ferryman of the underworld. He brings dead souls into the underworld, and that's why Greek people are often buried with gold coins underneath their tongues, so that they could pay the ferryman. And actually, that's probably where the expression comes from. Huh, I never thought of that before. Anyways, so they could get into the underworld. It was just interesting to know that Clark Kent is dying, and yet here he is getting ferried in a very symbolic way into the underworld. So that was a cool thing that Grant Morrison did. It was also interesting really getting to see Lex Luthor's motivation for hating Superman, because you always get the impression that he's just jealous of Superman, but seeing Lex in his darker side really gave you a better perspective of what you're looking at when you're seeing Lex Luthor and what he's doing and for what reason. So that was cool. There's a couple of pretty cool characters. For instance, Zabarro and Mr. Quintum. Zabarro was cool. He kind of seemed pathetic at times. I didn't really particularly like him, but he did add that moral dilemma that I'm sure Grant Morrison was looking for. And I just really felt sorry for the guy. I mean, here he is, he has to live his life among bumbling idiots, and he's just forced to live his life like that. So that sucks. Mr. Quintum, he's pretty cool. I like the fact that they didn't use Dr. Hamilton or anything like that, because Dr. Hamilton and any of the other characters were post Crisis on Infinite Earths. So that, yeah, unless you count the Dan Jurgens run, but I don't really know if Hamilton was in the Dan Jurgens run. I'll have to check that. Anyways, but if you notice, Superman always has the one intelligent character to balance out his brawn, because Superman can't figure out everything, right? So he always has that one guy that Superman presents what he's found to, and he says, oh, yeah, okay, so this equals this, okay, now you gotta go beat this guy up. And in this case, Mr. Quintum was that one. So it was cool to see his character, but during the first issue, I was very confused as to who he was, but that was cleared up eventually. Alright, now I'm gonna go on a mini rant. I'm against Grant Morrison, so you Grant Morrison fans should probably, you know, stop listening. Even though, don't stop listening to the podcast, just this part, please. Please? Anyways, enough of my groveling to the audience. Alright, Morrison was messing with me again. What he does is he likes to put an important plot point in a teeny little spot of a teeny little panel. For instance, in The Two Kryptonians Poisoned, well, he didn't even put that piece of information into the plot until afterwards. And I thought that was piss-poor storytelling, because, I mean, at least he could have given them a hint. Could have given us a hint of what happened to these Kryptonians. And instead, they collapse, And Superman tells him. And it's just completely ridiculous, because I looked back for like 15 minutes. Okay, did I miss something? Was there a panel I missed? Was there a line of dialogue I missed? No, nothing. Not even in the animated movie did they explain it all that well. In fact, it just, made me so angry. But that's not even the whole, that's not even what I'm most angry about. Okay, so Lex Luthor comes along at the end, and he's got, you know, his plan going on, but then you start reading, and then Superman defeats Lex, and he's like, okay, I gotta go fix the sun now. And I was like, what? Wait, when? What's wrong with the sun? I know you just had the battle with the Sun Eater, but why do you need to go fix the sun? And I did not find out that the sun was poisoned until, about 15 minutes of searching later. Grant Morrison had put it in one line of one piece of dialogue, in one small bubble, in one small panel. Now, my eyes, they like to automatically go to the most interesting panel. Now, I try not to do that. I like to go back and read what I missed. But the panel that I was particularly looking at was Clark Kent getting up and, you know, waking up. And I automatically went to that because it was more dramatic than Jimmy Olsen yelling at Lex Luthor. So, yeah, I missed that line of dialogue. And I pretty much lost out on the story for it. And that just, makes me so mad. He puts this incredibly, incredibly crucial plot point to the end of the story and the symbolism of the story in one light dialogue, in one small speech bubble, in one small panel. Just, I hate when he does that. That's the one thing I don't like about Morrison. He uses excellent symbolism. He always adds something new to characters, but he just, when he does that, it pisses me off. Okay, alright, rant's over. All you Morrison fans can listen again. Alright, so, just in minor little detail that I saw. Okay, so when Lois is kissing Clark, Superman, for that last time, he's got his skin opening up and the solar energy starting to spark out. And I was just thinking to myself, wouldn't kissing a sparking guy hurt? I mean, this guy is obviously, his temperature's rising. He's got solar energy literally bursting from his body. They'd be like kissing a hot sidewalk. Don't you think that would hurt? No, anyways, alright, let's get to the animated movie before I completely screw this podcast up. Alright, so I did have a couple of problems with the choices that the animators did. For instance, the art style was Superman. I thought his lips were way too defined. Now, when you're animating a woman, you can define her lips all you want, because women, they wear lipstick, and that defines the lips in real life, so you can do it in the animation. But guys, make sure that, just draw their lips, but don't define the lips. Make it a subtle detail. Make it something you don't really notice. And in this, I just could not stop staring at his lips. It was just bothering me how defined they were. Another thing that bothered me was that Mr. Quintum didn't get a rainbow coat at all. He got this weird-looking colored coat, but it wasn't rainbow. And the whole, the rainbow coat adds so much to the Quintum character. It just shows you who he is, and he's a weird person. And instead, you got a guy wearing a coat. You didn't get a guy wearing a rainbow coat. You got a guy wearing a coat. So that was disappointing. And another thing that disappointed me was that they put the answer to the riddle in a newspaper. Now, unless you've read it, you don't know what riddle I'm talking about, but in case you haven't read it, Superman gets super intelligence from his burst of the sun. So, he's pretty smart, and I'm sure he can figure out pretty much anything, right? Well, he gets asked this riddle, and instead of him figuring it out on his own, which he did in the comic, they thought the audience would be too stupid to figure it out that he figured it out on his own. So they put it in a newspaper. Not even a newspaper ad. Really? You think Superman's not smart enough to figure that out, that he actually has to use an ad for it? And what are the odds of his finding an ad at the same time that you get an unsolvable riddle? Ugh. Alright, so they seriously downplay Jimmy and Quintum, which I can understand for the sake of saving time. And they did do a better job of explaining both the Kryptonian poisoning and the sun poisoning, and the Solaris battle was pretty kick-ass. I have to admit, it was awesome. It was cool, it was sweet. It wasn't the best battle I've ever seen in an animated movie. That's probably in the New Frontier. That's such an awesome movie. But it was pretty good, and it added that moment that you needed in this movie, because otherwise it would have been boring. And in my opinion, that battle saved this movie. It did, yeah. So the movie itself did give me a better idea of the plot itself, and it helped, you know, smooth over the crappy little god dang points that Grant Morrison put in. But it was nowhere near as good as The New Frontier. Animated movie-wise, I compare all movies to The New Frontier, because that was such a good movie. It was such a good adaptation, and it just was nowhere near as good as its counterpart, nowhere near as good as any of the other animated movies that DC's come out with in the past couple years. I mean, it's even better than Green Lantern, so... Green Lantern, the animated movie, to be specific. I think if you didn't really understand some of the symbolism or the plot itself, I would recommend going and seeing the movie. Or not going and seeing, but getting the movie. Go to your local library, go to Blockbuster, whatever, just get the movie. Because I saw the symbolism at the end, but I didn't fully comprehend the whole magnitude of it. But when I saw the movie, it like clicked. It was just like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I get it. All right. Wow, Morrison, you're a genius. I didn't see that before. So, the movie makes Grant Morrison look better than the comic book does, in my opinion, because it fixes all the problems that Grant Morrison put in his story. Alright, so, final grade. I'm going to give the book an A, because I think it's a classic. Despite some of its flaws, it does bring Superman to a new level, a level I hope that we'll see in the reboot this September. But also I'm giving the animated movie a B+, because it just, I don't think that this story was worthy enough to be put into animated form. It didn't have all the because of the time limits, it didn't have all the battles that made it an animated, it would only appeal to the diehard comic fan. So I think combined, it's an A, because, you know, you can't really detract from an A, but just the anime movie itself is a B+. All right, I'm done. I've rambled on for long enough. I'm sure you're bored of listening to me going and all sorts of stuff like that. So I guess next episode is John Constantine Hellblazer, Original Sins, Volume 1. Of the Hellblazer. This is the re-release in the 2000s, not the original trade volumes. So I think there might be more issues, I'm not sure. But coming up, that you can all look forward to, The Sandman, Volume 3, Dream Country. Runaways, Volume 1, Pride and Joy. Ex Machina, Volume 1. And Why the Last Man. So, yes, there was a change in the order, but, you know, I think that the episodes are going to be better for it. So, thank you for listening. I've rambled on for long enough, and goodbye.